Welcome to Break Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer. It's the 88th episode, the Robert Kubica episode. That's a throwback to my OG listeners when I used to do that for every single episode. But I'm here after this season opener in Bahrain. It felt like deja vu a little bit with a dominant Red Bull 1-2 finish at the front to start the season. But before we get to today's episode, first, a quick reminder to check out the link tree in the description. It has links to all the platforms where you can find this podcast and the ways you can contact me. Now, let's get into the first race rundown of the season with an old friend of the show. All right, I'm joined by a good friend of mine. He likes Red Bull a bit too much for my liking, but he's all right, I guess. Shaq, how are you, buddy?
Good. Arch-nosis, Mercedes over there. But yeah, no, we're all good. Good to the new season.
Well, how did you get ready for the season, man? You watch any testing or Drive to Survive? Were you just as amped as any other year?
Yeah, I mean, I was super excited going into this year. You never know what could happen. There's so much talk, as you know, over every winter of how much performance each team is gaining. McLaren seemed very confident in themselves. Mercedes, you don't know what they can really come up with. But I honestly didn't watch too much of the testing just because of the time difference and with working, but was able to recap with some YouTube videos on each day. But yeah, super excited going into the season. And to see the Red Bull launch with a completely different concept was a little bit nerve-wracking, but I had faith in them, and obviously we found out with the race that it ended up working out.
Yeah, I described the Red Bull launch as very loud, just with Christian Horner, of course, front and center as well during all this stuff that's been going on with him. And then, of course, the bodywork on the thing just looks like a work of art. So that was probably easily the launch that probably stole the headlines from everyone. But yeah, did you watch any Drive to Survive as well?
Yeah, I did end up watching Drive to Survive. Actually, I think I have two episodes left, haven't fully caught up to it. But honestly, I was actually surprised with it, with being such a kind of a lull season with Red Bull dominance. I wasn't sure what kind of storylines they were going to follow, but it's always enjoyable to see the behind the scenes with teams like Alpine and Haas. And actually one of my favorite episodes so far is the Mercedes one, with Lewis going over the negotiations with Mercedes. Funny that we know what the end result is with him going to Ferrari. Yeah. But no, all in all, that was a really good episode in my opinion.
Yeah. A lot of comments in that episode did not age well. Toto saying that he would not look good in red, and we already know he's going to be going to red. And I think Lewis himself even said, I can't see myself leaving the team. Like, this is my family. And it's like, by the time it gets to the actual, or by the time it's on Netflix, everyone's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Nice. Liar.
Exactly.
So yeah, no, I think it was a pleasant surprise. I kind of reviewed it last week. I didn't want to give out any spoilers, but at this point, I think if you haven't seen it, what are you doing? Come on, hurry up. I guess you haven't finished it though, so I won't get into what's in at the end there. But yeah, no, I think it was a good season. Pleasant surprise because of how dull last season was with the few storylines, as you said. But yeah, it's always a great way to get into Formula One mood again for the start of a season. So yeah. Now that we have a Bahrain Grand Prix to review, I think we should get into that. The first look at some competitive running. We haven't seen really the real pecking order or what could be the pecking order yet. So that's always what's the most exciting part about the Bahrain Grand Prix. High hopes this year, but maybe a bit of a gut punch for F1 fans hoping for a tighter fight at the front. Except for you, maybe. You're a Verstappen fan, so how are you feeling right now?
Fantastic. Like we never left.
Wow. Okay. That's not what I wanted to hear. I thought it was interesting. Red Bull not leading in any of the practice sessions though. So leading into qualifying, I think there was even more hope than usual, because after testing, the thinking was, okay, Red Bull might have a half a second per lap lead on the rest of the fields. Red Bull wanted to say it was more like 2-3 tenths. Playing it down a little bit, but Yeah, like they were dealing with some issues during practice. I don't know if you saw any of that, but then they turn up in quali and it looks like a replay of last year over the race, like close in qualifying and then over the race distance, a lot more dominant. What did you kind of make of that?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. With the practices being slow and then them coming out and Max giving that lap and qualifying, it was still pretty uncertain of what was going to happen. You had talks of the Ferrari and the Haas. I mean, Haas isn't in contention, but they're similar with the Ferrari that they dealt with their tire deg in the offseason. And that was a complete different car from 12 months ago at this time. So with Leclerc actually setting the fastest time in Q2, we were hoping for obviously a better race on the Sunday, and you thought he was going to be right there with Max if the tire deg concern was what they were hoping for, right? With that said, Max and the Red Bull just took away at the start. Although the Ferrari's tire deg did seem to hold up, it just still wasn't enough. Obviously, Charles had brake issues that slowed him down. But all in all, yeah, pretty much a repeat of last year.
Well, something I think is very interesting, though, is that last year, Max was only 12 seconds ahead of Checo, I believe. But to the next car, which was Fernando Alonso, it was a 38-second gap. This year, it was only 24 seconds, roughly, to Carlos Sainz in third. So in terms of Ferrari, Ferrari was 48 seconds back. So they actually clawed back 24 seconds in the matter of a year. And that was with both of them dealing with brake issues, Charles a little bit worse. And then we also had Mercedes, you know, dealing with their own problems. It was the first Bahrain Grand Prix with no retirements, but I wouldn't say the reliability was fantastic. I mean, Williams also had problems with their screen and stuff. I don't know if you saw that, like, Logan Sargeant, the reason he went off is because his brake balance like shot up like 40 points or whatever, 40 degrees. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of interesting that it seemed maybe a little bit the same as this year, but the other teams definitely didn't have great weekends.
No, yeah, that's for sure. Red Bull had everything put together this weekend, figured out all their issues, and sounds like the first couple practices. I mean, it looks like a true representation of where the kind of grid sits right now, but I don't think it's nowhere close to the true representation of how close they are to Red Bull. But I mean, it's so hard to say. Like you said, Max was 20 seconds ahead of Checo and about 24% seconds ahead of Sainz. But Max isn't going full out that entire time. He could have been 15, 20 seconds ahead of Checo if he was really pushing. And that's the scary thing, is you really saw him push for the first 7-8 laps, and then for the first 3 or 4 laps after getting new tires, right? So he was just controlling the race, keeping his distance ahead, but you don't really know the true pace of that Red Bull, even with Ferrari and Mercedes, woes they went through over the weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how Saudi comes. Should be a stronger track for, let's say, McLaren and Ferrari, to see how much that gap closes up. But it's hard to say at this point.
Yeah, I think the saving grace for some of the teams is that Bahrain is probably the most Red Bull track there is almost across the entire calendar in terms of just how rough the surface is. Red Bull's biggest strength easily, and Max Verstappen's strength as well, is the tire management. And that's something that I think the other teams deal with a lot more. At a smoother surface in Jeddah, it should be a lot better for Ferrari and McLaren in theory. We'll see when we get there. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Checo as well, because I feel like it was a bit of a classic Checo weekend, wasn't it? I mean, didn't qualify great, quite a few tenths off of Max there. And then he was fine on race day. I think he did exactly what he needed to do, but still not quite as quick as Max. And if you compare it to last year, he was a little bit more on it. So I feel like the fact that he was 22 seconds off instead of 12 might be a bit of a bad omen for the season.
Yes and no. I think Checo, what Red Bull needed Checo to do was to finish P2. That was pretty much the goal for him. So he achieved that, obviously. Got through the order pretty quickly and efficiently. Didn't get held up behind anyone for too long. So if Checo can just continue to do that all season long, maybe pick up a podium when Max if he ever falls off, or if something happens to pick up that win, that is his role. As long as he finishes P2 or on the podium, his seat should be fine for next year. And that's not what Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki Tsunoda, Liam Lawson wants to hear, but that is his ultimate goal, is to just be behind Max. I don't think it really matters what the deficit is between him and Max, just because I don't think there's any driver on the grid that can actually close that gap to Max in the same car. So yeah, I think he did exactly what he needed to do, and he just got to continue that for a full season and not just do it for the first 10 races.
But if you think about, what we just talked about and how the other team should be closer at some other tracks coming up, Carlos, all things considered, was still 3 seconds behind the Red Bulls in the end. And I would argue that Red Bull having the extra soft at the end also was huge for Checo and making sure he kind of cruised home to P2. Yes, it was still a dominant 1-2 for Red Bull, and as you said, that's exactly what they want him to do. But I feel like the pace there could be a bit worrying for the tracks coming up.
Yeah, no, for sure. I don't know. It just really just depends how the other teams do. Yeah, that gap needs to be closed a little bit more than 20 seconds for sure. But like, as far as Checo's seat by the end of the year, he does need to close that gap. But yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit hard to say with the rivals coming in what they're gonna do. One thing with the Red Bulls in total that Carlos Sainz did say in an interview yesterday that I found was just insane, is that Ferrari knew since testing that the Red Bull had the same tire degradation on the softs as other team have on the hards, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And that's just the master class of Adrian Newey.
Yeah, I don't know how the Red Bull does it in terms of their tire whispering abilities. It's really ridiculous. And I think that's also a skill that is underrated for Max Verstappen as well. He's not just quick. I feel like how he can be quick and also look after his tires is also just something that only the greats can do. And he is absolutely one of the greats. So I feel like he deserves some credit in that as well. I feel like there's been plenty of races in the past couple of years where Checo falls off at the end of a stint, Max just keeps on going. I think that was the difference in Miami last year. I mean, I think it was, I don't remember exactly, and I don't want to get in too much into Miami 2023, but I think it was like Max was on older hard tires and Checo had already come into the pits and Max was still going faster. And that's just how relentless he is. But yeah, it should be interesting to see how the Red Bull pairing goes in terms of Checo closing that gap. It's still one race, but I just feel like he usually starts so strong. It's been something that he's done the past few years in a row, and this is probably his weakest start. So I just worry a little bit there. But we can move on
I think real
to
quick
sorry.
with sorry, I think real quick with that is it's hard to get a full representation of where he is at. I feel like Saudi is better suited towards Checo with a street circuit, and he's done really well there in the past. So I think by the time the next race is over, we can kind of get a better representation of how close he is to Max.
Absolutely. Some teams don't even like they don't even consider, looking at what the pecking order is until like after 6 or 7 races. So there's still lots to figure out for sure. We don't want to overreact by any means, but I don't think it was the greatest start for Checo. So something to keep an eye on for sure. But I wanted to get into to Ferrari a little bit with you as well. Carlos, of course, rounded out the podium. I think he was impressive all throughout the weekend. And that fight with Charles, oh, that was spicy, man. I think this might be a new sort of trend for this duo.
100%. Yeah, man, that was the highlight of the race, honestly, was watching those two go at it. Carlos has a ton to prove this year. He wants to give Ferrari a big FU to getting Lewis in there instead of him. And he wants as many teams on the table as possible for next year, right? And actually, before the season, I had a prediction that I actually think Carlos Sainz will finish ahead of Charles Leclerc in the standings. I just think, I don't know if there's a curse on Leclerc or what's going on, but
Ha ha ha.
he's always got something that he's battling, whether it's the car or it's a mistake or whatever. There's very few weekends that he can actually pull everything together with the car as well and perform. And then he was starting to do that at the end of last year. But I think Carlos just has a ton to prove this year. And he's going to show people why he's one of the best drivers.
That is certainly a bold prediction. I've heard that prediction actually be made elsewhere. And my thoughts immediately are just based off of where the car was last year. It seems like it's ridiculous to suggest that Carlos would be on top of Leclerc over the course of a whole season. But yeah, those same questions still hang over Leclerc. It's just like, is he too mistake prone? Can he keep it together over the course of a whole season? I think Sainz is someone who might not have the outright pace as Leclerc. I think most people would agree, but he's probably one of the smarter drivers on the grid. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I think he would be the perfect number two at any team. I just don't think Carlos has quite the outright pace to win a championship either. So it's tough. I would take Leclerc over Sainz over the course of the season. I wouldn't necessarily agree with you. But yeah, a lot to prove this year. I'm super excited to see how this duo race each other all year long, because Carlos doesn't have to really listen to anything Ferrari says if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, like if the way the season is going is that Max and Red Bull are just going to dominate again, there's so many storylines to watch for this year that makes Formula One's just so much more exciting. Like the Ferrari pairing, to see how that goes. Lewis is in the exact same situation with Mercedes, to see how he kind of hands that torch to Russell, or if he wants to kind of make a statement himself in his last year. It's going to be really, really interesting to see some of these duos go at it.
Yeah, I think the Mercedes pairing, it should take a little bit more to kind of push them over the edge, just because Lewis has been there so long. He was the number one. Carlos never was. And I just feel like Lewis has to be a little bit more tighter knit with everyone within that team, you would think. So they should be able to keep a lid on that at least a little bit more than I think Ferrari should, but who knows? It could easily blow up as well. So I guess we'll move right over to them. Mercedes, I think, looked a little bit third on the road today. Probably could have had a little bit more. How do you feel they fared? Do you think, you know, it was positive for this P2 fight, I guess, between the rest of their team with this brand new concept?
Yeah, I mean, Mercedes actually looked really strong at the start of the race too. Russell was gaining on Verstappen on some at the first couple laps. He was starting to get to him, and I was starting to worry a little bit. But again, it's so hard to say because they had problems. They had, like, in Lewis's car, his seat was broken. He was having battery issues. He was having brake issues. Same with George was having battery issues. So again, it's so hard to see the true pace of that car, but it does look night and day compared to the past 2 years and their new concept. The car looks great, looks well engineered, and it looks like they actually have something to fight with this year. It's going to be a really interesting battle between them and Ferrari, I believe, for that order. In terms of what you said, that maybe it might not blow up between Lewis and Russell. I'm not too sure about that. There was multiple moments last year where the two kind of got into it, and that was just a little glimpse. And I think this year we could see a lot more of that as well.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I just think they might be able to, you know, be a little bit more civil than I think Carlos has absolutely nothing to lose, where Lewis has like just so many years within the team that I don't think he would want to leave it in a sour way. However, that being said, I still think it could easily reach a point where Mercedes kind of just ends up pushing Lewis out anyway, and then he's probably not going to respond quite nicely to that. And if George wants to put his elbows out, Lewis is going to respond as well. So it could easily blow up. I just think the Ferrari one has even more potential. We're already seeing it. Carlos did not care about Charles there at all, clearly, at least in how I saw it. But for Mercedes, I think there has to be something said about the fact that they overhauled their car more than anyone. And they arguably made an advancement on Ferrari and McLaren, I guess. I don't know if Mercedes was ever the second fastest team last year. over the course of the entire season. They finished second, but were they ever really second fastest? I'm not so sure. So the fact that they overhauled their entire car and they're still right in that fight, I think has to be a huge positive for them. But yeah, they certainly did not have their ducks in a row in Bahrain. Quite a few fundamental issues there. So yeah, we'll see. I've heard reports. I think Toto said that it cost them half a second a lap. I don't know about that. He might be exaggerating a bit there, but it definitely had some impact on their performance, the power unit stuff. So we'll see in a few more races how they fare. I wanted to ask you about McLaren as well, kind of the only other team really even close to that fight or in with Red Bull. I think they probably seem to be fourth fastest here. The only reason I think they finished ahead of either Mercedes was just because of their issues. So yeah, I expected more from this team in the offseason. I initially had them second in the constructors and I moved them down after testing. So what did you expect more from McLaren?
Yes, I did, especially with all the positive energy coming out of that camp. Both drivers seem pretty ecstatic about the car, their new concept, some additions they were adding as well. Lando signing the big contract, obviously believes in the team. So yeah, I did expect more. At the same time, as Bahrain's never been a strong race for McLaren, it's one of their toughest tracks on the calendar. So with that being said, with testing in the race, it's kind of hard to say where that true pace is, but they, again, it's a complete 360 of where they were last year at this point. They seem to have a car that works. It just depends on, I think, the circuit for them. It's pretty track specific. So I guess we'll see. They should be a lot stronger next weekend in Saudi Arabia. But yeah, I was expecting more, but I don't think 6 and 8 is really that bad for them with being in one of their worst tracks of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, if you kind of make the comparison as to where they were in Bahrain last year, if the improvements that they make from Bahrain to the rest of the season are the same as this year, they'll be winning every single race for the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, 6 and 8, McLaren fans got to be pretty ecstatic with that after the last 2 years of just absolute Bahrain nightmares. So maybe they've somewhat exercised the demons at that track and now they're only looking forward. But yeah, I don't have as much to say here. I think Lando could have qualified much better. I think he could have been front row. He made another mistake in qualifying, which is, I would say, starting to become a bit of a pattern with him. I feel like every time he has a chance for pole or front row, he always messes up the last lap. Am I crazy to say that?
No. Yeah, you're 100% right. He is pretty mistake prone when it comes to the qualifying. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think McLaren is really strong this year. I do have a lot of hope for them. And I think the battle for second is honestly going to be neck and neck with Ferrari and Mercedes and McLaren. I truly believe that they're going to be in that fight and not just immediately go to like fourth or fifth.
Yeah, I think a whole season of these three teams being really close is going to be electric. Whether they really push Red Bull remains to be seen. But I think these three will be fighting all year long, and that is something definitely to look forward to for Formula One fans. So yeah, I guess based on the qualifying and the race, man, it's just one track. As we said, we don't want to overreact too much, but who are you most worried about that's going to catch your team or catch your number one man out in front at some races this year?
I honestly don't think there's anyone or any team that's going to I'm being serious. I don't think there's any team that's honestly going to touch Red Bull this year. I'm sure there's going to be someone that's going to get a win this year. I'm not saying Red Bull's going to win all 24
I think this year. Yeah,
20, yeah, crazy. Okay, 24 races, there's no way. Like, that would just be ridiculous. But on true pace, I just don't see any team competing with the Red Bull. But I do see Ferrari and McLaren being like neck and neck with that second. And we'll see where Mercedes is as well. It's really hard to say.
yeah, for audio listeners there, I was just clutching my heart. That was heartbreaking. But yeah, I think you're probably right at certain tracks, because at least if you're going to, over the course of the season, I agree with you. No one's going to touch Max, but I'm just hoping for at least a few more races for him to be challenged at. And I think the McLaren and the Ferrari have certain tracks or certain characteristics where they'll be strong at certain tracks. Like, we might turn up in Japan and McLaren might be right up there. Who knows? I think that's a track that they love. Same with Qatar. They performed super well there last year. Ferrari's going to go all out at Monza. You know, they're going to be ready for that race. So you're probably right. It's hard to say what sort of track Mercedes is going to be really strong at this point.
Mercedes is very just consistent with all the tracks, whereas McLaren and Ferrari are very strong at specific tracks. And I think that's kind of what we saw in the standings last year with McLaren or Mercedes in second place, is they were just consistent throughout the entire season, where Ferrari and McLaren where Ferrari and McLaren just had some horrible weekends. So I think that's where we're going to see the big difference in the standings there.
Yeah, and really, I think it's all going to come down to another big development race this year as well. It's still early. Mercedes is still in a learning phase because they changed their car the most. I am hopeful that now with they're saying that what they're getting in the simulator and in the wind tunnel is perfectly correlating. I think I was saying this last year too, though. So everything should be correlating better now. They should be okay, maybe 2 years, but they should be developing better. That's the hope. But yeah, over the course of the season, no, it's Red Bulls to lose, but yeah, at certain tracks, as I said, Japan, Monza, hoping maybe McLaren and Ferrari can challenge there. Now, a couple teams that are not going to be challenging Red Bull this year, barring a miracle. I want to start with RB. I expected a bit more performance from this team at the track as well. My bold prediction for the race was that they would get double points, but I don't even want to talk about their performance. Did you see what happened after the race?
Yeah, man, that was honestly, I don't even know how to describe it. It was honestly a bit sad to watch, to be honest. The incident was, what was it, lap 48 or something like that, Yuki and Ricardo switched. Ricardo was on the newer set of tires, thinking that they could get to Kevin Magnussen. It wasn't going to happen. Yuki got very upset about that switch, and after the race almost hit Daniel when going around their cooldown lap. Yeah, just absolutely crazy. Did not see this happening at all. Yuki and Daniel off track are like some of the nicest, funniest people. But yeah, Yuki, he's got some fire in him, and if you piss him off, he'll let you know.
Well, I'm more curious actually to get your sort of take on the situation in terms of, like, do you think it was a fair reaction from Tsunoda? Like, do you think the switch was unnecessary considering they were fighting for 12th position? Daniel certainly was on, like, he was on the softs. Yuki was on the hard. He already had clawed back, I think, like a 4 second gap from like the beginning of their stints. So Daniel was going faster, but again, he was never going to catch Stroll for 10th. So do you think it was just unnecessary? Do you think the reaction was warranted? I want to know your take on the situation.
Honestly, I think you always let the fastest driver go through no matter what. If you're going to catch him or not, why keep the faster driver behind? So I don't really disagree with the call for letting Ricardo through. Yuki's reaction, yeah, it was a bit out of character. Well, not out of character, but it was it was just a little bit uncalled for, to be honest. Neither one of them were going to get any points, but yeah, you always let the faster driver go. It's as simple as that. But I mean, there's a lot of potential in that team for both of them to do really well, depending on how Sergio does to get that other Red Bull seat. So I can see how maybe when you look at this from 10 months from now, you see in the standings, oh, well, Daniel Ricciardo finished ahead of Yuki here. How that maybe looks, I don't know if that really weighs on anything, but he did finish higher at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think this this race might be forgotten by the end of the year, and they just look at, you know, race head to heads, it's going to be one Daniel, Yuki zero. So that is fair. And I get the frustration to a point. You never want to let your teammate through. But yeah, it's completely unwarranted to be dive bombing your teammate and locking up massively on the cooldown lap and then almost sideswiping him afterwards. I think if you're Yuki, man, you gotta think about, if you're trying to make it to Red Bull, you may have just ruined your chance already. Like, they're like, okay, this kid has clearly not gotten any more mature or any more. Like, how do you think he's gonna handle getting just torched by Max? If this is how he's handling letting his teammate get through on a meaningless opening race of the season for no points. So I think Yuki's not thinking clearly there. He's just thinking, I don't want to let my teammate through. But in the end, if Red Bull is where you're trying to be, that was not what you wanted to just show Helmut Marko.
No, 100% agree. I mean, Max was like that too when he came in. He was kind of a little bit like Yuki. But he obviously matured and he was just a different type of driver, but he was very hot-headed. He was very hot-headed and, you know, would do sort of that kind of thing. But yeah, no, that's not a good look for Yuki at all. And yeah, I think it's something that you'll definitely remember when picking your drivers.
Yeah, at least for Max, when he was just like playing bowling with some cars early on in his career, he was doing it for podiums and not for P13. But yeah, no, Max has certainly come a long way. And you're right, he was, I would say, immature, but he was also 16. Yuki's like 22. So yeah, by 22, Max was winning races and challenging at the front. So it's a little bit different, but I do see your point for sure. Yeah, I guess that's kind of it with RB, another team at the back that also completely overhauled their car, and they are certainly not in the P2 fight, is Alpine. Don't even hold back on this team, man. Like, literally just completely give it to them if you want, because I've heard their technical director and head of aero have also resigned now after the race, which is just bonkers to me because they've already lost so many personnel. Just what in the world is happening here?
Man, it's super disappointing. The thing I like about Drive to Survive is you get kind of this insight of the people working around different teams, and Alpine seems like an amazing culture, to be honest with you, and such a great team. And I love Pierre Gasly. I'm not a huge fan of Alcon, to be honest with you, but I really like Pierre Gasly and I want him to do well. And this is just so disappointing, especially when you see Red Bull or RB making that step, and that's the team he's left to go to Alpine to try and fight for that P4, potentially P3 position. That's where they're trying to get to. That's their five-year plan that we've been hearing for the past 15 years.
Is it five years or is it 100 race? I forget.
I don't know, but they're well past it. No, and this team has a massive group of celebrity owners. So it's just it's just like, what is going on? What is the issue? And it's just, there's so many things. It's hard, like you said, that certain personnel is leaving the team. It's like, how do you build a culture and how do you build winning success when you constantly have people leaving and you're working with different people every single month, every single year? It's really hard to build on that. So yeah, super, super disappointing. I really hope they can figure it out. Their car is so fucking heavy, covered in carbon, and they've gone the complete wrong way.
Yeah, the hope is that they have, because it's a brand new concept, the same kind of thing that they're developing, but they've started so far off that even just some developments are only going to bring them back to the midfield, because, you know, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, they're going to keep going too. So to start this far back is just a horrible, horrible way to start the season. And you mentioned Drive to Survive. I think one of the funniest moments of the entire season was the very first episode where Aston Martin gets the podium, and then it just pans to the Alpine guys and they're like, how in the hell did they did that? And Otmar's like, they signed a bunch of Red Bull engineers. Got to do that, man. I think that says so much about Alpine though, because they just think that they can solve their issues just by snapping their fingers and doing one thing like signing Red Bull engineers. I think your take on their culture is very interesting, because I think, sure, they're trying to build a new culture, but the culture has to be the problem. That's why P3 people are continuing to leave. If it was a good work culture and they really thought that, okay, maybe we made a bit of a mistake, or yeah, we missed our targets, but you know what? I believe in the people that I'm working with. I believe in the management that we have. People would stick around, but that's clearly not what's happening here. There's got to be some sort of disconnect between, I don't know if it's like the larger Renault group and the team. I don't know, but this team seems more corporate than ever, in my opinion. And that's, I think, the problem that they have. I don't know how passionate they really are about racing anymore.
Yeah, no, it's sad to hear. And it also doesn't help you when you have the worst engine on the grid.
That's very true.
So I think that's a major component to it. I just said the thing about the cultures because what I've read and I've heard and listening to the race, they've said multiple times that there's amazing people that work at Enstone. And then watching the Drive to Survive, it just seems like a really good team personnel, but obviously there's something wrong there with the management or with the between them and Renault, or I don't know what's going on, but they're not even standing still. Other teams are going forward, they're taking steps back, and that's five times harder to go anywhere forward in Formula One.
It's a complete mystery, and for 10 years their engine department has just been so behind. So it is disappointing. I think it's just crazy to think that they're the fourth works team or whatever, or the fifth, I don't even remember. And they're just so perennially behind. It's been almost 20 years now since they've won the championship. I don't think there's any DNA from that team at all left here. It's just crazy what's going on there. Do you think there's any chance they're in Formula One for the foreseeable future? Think they might sell? It's early days. They're not going to be running to sell right now, obviously, but do you think there's any possibility of that?
I mean, yeah, it's an interesting point, especially when you have, we talked about that massive group of celebrity investors. Alpine was always kind of right there and ready to make that next step, and it would have been so profitable and such a great team. But if they're seeing this, at this point, they're going to end in P7 or P8 in the championship, which is nowhere where they want to be. And it's just, I don't know. It's really, really hard to say. It's when you have that many group of outsider investors into an organization, it's just, there's a lot of different opinions out there. And if they keep doing this bad, they're going to lose a ton of money. So if they're not making forward steps, then you would have to think that maybe the team is in jeopardy of being sold in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, 16th and 18th, I think, is where they finished. I might even be wrong on that. I might have even been worse. That's just not going to cut it.
17 and 18.
17 and 18, perfect. You got it pulled up. Yeah, that is just an absolute nightmare start to the season. And it doesn't sound like it's going to be any better in the near future until they really, get some weight off of that car and develop it. And with people potentially leaving, that's obviously not a good sign. Tenured people within that team as well, important people. And they're already ready to leave after one race. That's not good. But anyway, that's enough on Alpine. I thought there was too much Alpine in Drive to Survive, and I don't want to too much Alpine to be in this episode either. So the last thing I want to talk to you about that's somewhat Bahrain related is, of course, your team principal. What is going on here? I mean, I have to ask you about it because he's been cleared of any wrongdoing by the larger Red Bull group. They investigated the case, but this investigation is still hanging over this team, and quite a lot has developed since just a week ago when I recorded. The leak, of course, he's staying in the spotlight with some of these, it seems like he's sort of making a statement by bringing his wife into the paddock and some of the things he said. I want to hear your thoughts on this. I know it's kind of a broad topic, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a hard topic to talk about because there's so little information out there. So it's hard to actually get a full opinion on it. I mean, I love Christian Horner. I think he's an amazing team principal. Obviously, he's the longest tenured one in F1. He is, in my opinion, the glue to that team. He's known it from the very start. He knows what the dog days are. He knows what tough times are, the hunt for Mercedes in the late teens. And then now to be back on top, like he has been through it all. But it is a massive question mark. If he leaves, will Adrian Newey leave? Because they're very close together. Jos Verstappen has come out and said that Horner needs to go. He's making it very vocal, his opinion that he needs to get out. I've heard there's different opinions with the Red Bull organization versus Red Bull Racing. With the Red Bull organization saying that they would like to see him go, but the Red Bull Racing saying that they would like to keep him. We're definitely not hearing the end of this. Obviously, with the leaks coming out, the lawsuit was settled, but with the leaks coming out, obviously someone in that party thinks that there's unfinished business and that they wanted to get this out there. So I don't think this is the end of it. Ford's not happy for 2026. They're coming in to join Red Bull. They want him out. They don't want anything to do with this. So yeah, no, it's a massive question mark. And if I were to give my prediction, I don't think we're going to see Christian Horner with the team for next year or potentially even sometime this year. I think he's going to go. And it's just, what kind of implications does that have with other personnel in Red Bull? It's honestly, it really sucks being a Red Bull fan to see how this is going to go and who's going to potentially leave because of it.
Well, yeah, I tried to talk about this a couple episodes ago, and you're absolutely right saying that there's no details to go off of. So it's hard to say, but with Red Bull doing their own investigation and clearing them of any wrongdoing, that's pretty much all we have to go off of right now. I always said that, you know, if he's not really guilty and this investigation is going around the team, like, it's obviously very unfortunate, and to see him leave Red Bull would be a travesty and such a stain on his incredible legacy. As you said, he's the most tenured F1 team principal. He's been around for so long. He's a legend of the sport at this point. However, if he did do the things that he was accused of, then yeah, he doesn't deserve to be in his post. I can't believe that they kept him front and center throughout the entire investigation. It's so strange to me. Like, when have you ever seen any company executive stay in the limelight throughout such a rigorous investigation? It just never happened. So for me, that felt like a Horner decision to be like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm innocent, and I'm going to be confident in my innocence by staying in the limelight. And that was the craziest thing to me. And like, do you think that that's why he brought his wife into the paddock and has said some of the things he said in his post on Instagram? Like, do you think this is still him making a statement being like, I'm not going anywhere?
Yeah, I think he's going the road, I'm innocent until proven guilty. Continue on with business. And it is, like, if he, like you said, if the things that he's done are true, then yeah, he 100% deserves to be canned by Red Bull. Like, it's unacceptable for anyone to do something like that. But he's just going with the flow, see what happens, and hopefully everyone just kind of forgets about it, or he can pay off people. I don't know. Like, it's a really, really weird situation. But yeah, the statements he's made with his wife coming in the paddock, I mean, you got to feel for him too. And again, it is hard for other people to talk about it, because obviously he has a family, and I'm sure they've gone through a pretty horrible time with all of this. And with, who knows, obviously you don't want to downgrade anything, but what if it is all just kind of a speculation or not actually true? So it's hard to say until more details come out.
And we might be speculating a little bit here, but you would have to think that some people in that Red Bull team, all throughout Red Bull Racing, some people are not going to believe what the conclusion of the investigation, right? Like, you would think that some people working for Red Bull are a little bit worried about what's going on. What implications do you think this might have going forward? I know you kind of predicted that Horner might not stay with the team. Obviously a lot of pressure from Jos Verstappen to get him out. if Horner leaves, what do you think will happen? If Horner stays, what do you think will happen in terms of the rest of the team, Verstappen, Newey, and all the other team members at Milton Keynes?
I think if he stays, I honestly think the team will be okay. I think he has strong enough connections with Helmut, with Adrian. Obviously, he was the one to bring Adrian on in the beginning, and he's been there ever since, right? So I think he has enough rapport with people around him that if he does stay, it's going to be beneficial to the team. Obviously, there might be other people, maybe the victim of all this, and some of the people that they know, they may leave because they're saying, well, if he could do this, then what else can he do? And Red Bull didn't make the right decision and get rid of him. So yeah, it may create more difficulties in the inner organization of Red Bull. And then the other part of that is if he leaves, then like I said, who goes with him, right? It's kind of like the end of the dream team at Mercedes, but in a different way. Like with Horner leaving, he is that main centerpiece. And what happens at that point, yeah, who knows, but yeah, some potentially dark days coming.
With do you think Yas is kind of just speaking out by himself, or do you think this is any reflection of how Max is feeling right now? Like if Horner sticks around, is it Max driving for Mercedes next year or what?
Okay, calm down. No, I mean, dude, Yas has always just spoken his mind at all times, and I don't think there's a lot of times it's not even what Max is thinking. He just always speaks his mind. That's who Yas is. I don't think it's anything to do with Max or his opinions. Max just cares about winning. He wants to be in the fastest car. Red Bull is that team. If he stays or goes, Max will stay at Red Bull until they are not the fastest anymore, or he wants to retire.
Fair enough. Okay. I guess Max will stay at Red Bull a little bit longer. But I don't think he's going to leave, but I don't know. I feel like Yas has to have some sort of impact on Max, I think, but yeah, I'm happy to hear your take on it. I've been interested to hear that. But we've ran pretty long already, so I think it's time to run through the order of the race and then get to prize, demise, and surprise. So the results in the Grand Prix were, of course, Max Verstappen opening the year with a grand slam pole, fastest lap win, led every single lap 20 seconds behind him. Then was his teammate at Red Bull, Sergio Perez, rounding out the podium. Was Carlos Sainz, an impressive drive from him, P4, Charles Leclerc from the front row. Then it was George Russell in P5, Lando Norris P6, Lewis Hamilton in P7, all finishing pretty close on the road. Oscar Piastri a bit back from Lewis in P8. Then finishing with double points was Aston Martin, Fernando Alonso in P9, and Lance Stroll in P10. Of course, that is your driver standing, so we can skip over that. Looking at the constructors, Red Bull out in front with 44 points. Ferrari next behind as they finish third and fourth, 27 points. Mercedes next with 16. McLaren just a bit back from Mercedes with 12 points. And then fifth is Aston Martin with 3. The rest of the teams all on 0. Alpine is in last, though, because they had the lowest front runner. Prize, demise, and surprise, though, Shaq. I explained it to you before we started the recording here. We'll start with you, then. The prize of the weekend, who do you got?
I got the prize of the weekend, Carlos Sainz. I just thought it was a huge weekend for him to come out with the offseason of him getting canned by Ferrari. Seems like they have a good car underneath them, and he just unbelievable battles with Leclerc, and I'd give the prize to him. He was also driver of the day.
Yeah, a deserving driver of the day. I think the outside shout out for driver of the day, I don't know if I've ever seen one give out to someone who didn't score points, but I thought Zhou Guan Yu was actually pretty spectacular. He's not my prize. I'm going with Checo. And I know I was kind of harping on him earlier about needing to close the gap, but allow me to explain here. I think this was a huge W for Checo. The fact that Red Bull was so dominant, because this is exactly what he needs to keep his seat. We've always said once the field closes in, which we've been hoping happens for 2 years now, then Red Bull's going to need a better second driver because other teams are going to be quicker than him. But if this is the performance that the car has, Red Bull's fine because Verstappen can win the constructors by himself. So they can just keep a guy who's not going to challenge him. He's not going to ruffle feathers, and there's no reason not to sign him back. So I think this was a huge W for Checo if he wants to keep his Red Bull seat.
Totally agree with that. Yeah, that's a great take.
All right, well, let's move on to demise then. I'll start here. I'm going with Laura Mekies. He is the new team principal at VCARB or RB, whatever you want to call it. He's taken the L here because he's been the team principal of this team for one race, and he's already got his teammates going at each other. Daniel calling Yuki a helmet. Yuki's clearly not happy about what just happened there. So I don't know if that was ultimately a Laura Mekies call. You would think that he had to have some say on that driver switch, at least the final say or a final approval. So he's going to have to be handling this duo for the rest of the year, at least, because Liam Lawson is supposed to be coming into that team next year. So it's not like he should have 2 years of this duo, but still, he's got 23 more races to handle this.
Yeah, maybe they'll have to bring in Otmar since he's such a pro with dealing with two drivers. Maybe that's a possible solution.
Yeah, I think they definitely screwed up, man. They should have brought him to be the team principal there. So, yeah, I think – what do you got for the demise? We'll get into that.
The demise I have – and I don't even know if there's a worse – is there a worse word than demise? Because it would just be like we talked about. It would just be what we talked about earlier in Alpine. Just a complete shit show, gong show situation that they're in. I don't know if there's a worse word than demise, but whatever it is Alpine Racing right now. Just a horrible start to the year. I mean, they can only go up from here. Well, unless they finish P19 and P20, then that could be worse. But just a horrible, horrible start. And there's really not much. We've already dived into it. Not much else to say about that.
Yeah, that's a completely fair one there. How about your surprise, man?
My surprise of the race was Lance Stroll. Such a horrible start for him. I mean, such an amazing start for him until turn one. Just a bad situation to be in. Went out of control, was in P20. And for him to fight all the way back to P10, I just thought it was an amazing performance for Stroll. If he can keep this up for the whole season, then Aston Martin could be in the hunt with the other three teams for P2. Not saying they're going to get to P2, but it'd be interesting to see another team in the mix. And the reason they weren't really in the mix last year was because of Stroll. So if he can get his craft together and put weekend in and weekend out, kind of like what he just did today, this race, then they're going to be in a very good position.
Yeah. We didn't really get into Aston Martin a whole lot. I think, at qualifying, it kind of looked like exactly what was going on last year. Alonso, I think, was fantastic on Friday, not Saturday, as it usually is. He was fantastic. I think it was a hell of a lap to get himself on the third row, I think it was. I think McLaren's were on the fourth row, whatever. And then Stroll, a little bit of trouble in qualifying, as he seems to have basically all throughout his career. It seems like in qualifying, he struggles a little bit more, where the race, he does actually control a race pretty decently sometimes. And that's exactly what he did on race day. It's kind of funny how you said he had a good start or a bad start, or because really he had a terrible start, but a great start to the season. So that recovery was pretty special. I think to be even close to Fernando at the end of the race, it's exactly what you would hope from Stroll. And Fernando had a much better start to the race than Lance did. So yeah, I 100% agree with you. He was surprisingly pretty good. But my surprise is another team we haven't talked about yet, and that is Haas. They came to this race thinking that they would be not too far off the back, but they would be 10th fastest. And the talk around the paddock is that they might be the 6th fastest team. Nico Hülkenberg's lap times were close to that of Aston Martin's all throughout the race. Hülkenberg just had a nightmare start to the race as well. Of course, being tangled in with Stroll, and then Hülkenberg had to change his front wing where Lance didn't have to go through that pain. But yeah, Magnussen up in 12th last year at a track like Bahrain, where the tire drag is so bad, we would have seen them go straight to the back. After a couple laps, they would just be falling like stones. All the midfield team would be midfield teams rather would be passing through them with ease, and that didn't happen. So by the, at the end of a stint, RB's struggling to get past Magnussen, I think is a great, great sign for things to come for this team.
Yeah, no, that's a great surprise team. Last year, Haas was an amazing qualifier, but just, again, like you said, couldn't put it together in the race with their tire deg. And similar to Ferrari this year, it looks like they've solved that issue with the tire deg. So, again, they're an amazing qualifying car, the Haas. And if they can pull it together during the race, then, yeah, I could see them be in that P6, potentially, well, P7, potentially P6 position in the standings. So, very exciting. I think Hülkenberg is... he's a very quick driver. I would put him above Magnussen as well in terms of just the better driver in that duo. And I think for him, he's looking for another opportunity at a better team. And if Haas has a decent enough car this year that he can show that, then that's great for him.
Yeah, and the one thing I'm going to add on to that just before we wrap up here is that, of course, this was Ayo Komatsu's first race with the team, or as team principal, I should say, not with the team. He's been there a long time. And Günther Steiner, not there anymore. And I've seen a lot of people talking, giving Komatsu credit for this race. I just want to pump the brakes on that just a little bit. I'm not trying to like go big time defending Günther here, but it's not like Günther left in February or January or whenever it was, and then Ayo just snapped his fingers and solved the issues within this team. So pump the brakes. Günther wasn't the complete problem there, but I still think this is a great sign. And Ayo obviously has done a great job since the time he took over. But that's the only thing I wanted to say. I also did tweet that from the Brake Bias account, so follow that. But well, Shaq, another Saturday race this weekend. Do you expect anything different before we wrap up here?
Yeah, it should be an interesting race. Honestly, Saudi Arabia is one of my favorite races of the season. Love the qualifying at that track as well. But yeah, I think this... oh, it's unbelievable. I just think this race will actually give us a better understanding to see where these teams really are in the order. Hopefully Perez can close the gap to Verstappen a little bit. And I'm really, really hoping for McLaren to have a stronger performance in this upcoming weekend. So yeah, very excited for the race. What are your predictions?
I'm gonna get into my predictions in just a second, so I don't want to get into it too much. I'm gonna leave that for that segment, but I do think it's gonna look a little bit similar. I'll say that.
All right.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks for your time and coming on to talk all things Bahrain Grand Prix.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Brad.
All right, take care. All right, the conversation with Shaq ran a bit long, and I didn't want to get into my predictions for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix with him, so I had a little bit of a segment here. We heard his predictions. We'll get straight into mine pretty much. I'm just going to give my thoughts on the track. It's the fourth year of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, the tight, high-speed street track that it is. Maybe that's been overtaken, or the identity of that has been stolen a little bit by Vegas, but I still think Saudi Arabia is an absolutely thrilling track. As Shaq mentioned, it's fantastic to watch in qualifying. Sector 1 is an incredible circuit to watch an F1 car at its best. So I think it can definitely create some good racing, especially with its three DRS zones. Looking forward to what this track has to offer. Much smoother surface, completely different track for the drivers. So we do not still have a clear picture of the pecking order right now. This circuit, things could look completely different. So that is something to be excited about for sure. The race is going to be on Saturday again. That is out of respect for the first day of Ramadan falling on this Sunday. So that's why Bahrain was also moved back, because Formula One can't have two races in 6 days. So both the races to start the season are on Saturday. So prepare for that. Qualifying Friday, Saturday race. I think I'm pretty much good to go on the predictions. I think pole, I'm going to double down. I'm going to double down and say that Charles Leclerc is going to finish on pole this time around. I know I predicted it last time, and he did have the fastest time in qualifying, just not good enough for pole in Q3. Of course, his Q2 time was the fastest time, but conditions change. It's not really a fair comparison. But either way, I'm going to have to put Charles on pole this time around. I think Sainz and Verstappen will also be in that fight, though. Verstappen probably going to end up on the front row, though. Once again, on a Saturday, though, I think Verstappen will win. It'd be crazy to bet against anyone else at this point. He's obviously going to be handy here. But I think this time the Red Bulls will be split. So Checo is going to be on the podium. And I think Charles Leclerc will take home P2 and bounce back from his woes last week. Sainz will take home P4, kind of continuing this Red Bull Ferrari trend in the top four. I think Lando will be P5 instead of George Russell this time. McLaren, I'm kind of with Shaq there as well, backing them a little bit. Not going straight into my bold prediction, but I think Williams could be a team to keep an eye on out here because they, based off of their upgrade that came in Canada last year, so they didn't have the speed at any of the early tracks until Canada came around, and that's when they really started to score points with Albon. They would have done well at a track like this, I believe, anyway, last year. Maybe not so good through Sector 1, to be fair, but still, it's very high power, and the slippery nature of that car is obviously going to do well. I mean, Sargeant's time was incredible until he had that silly track limit error, if you guys remember, in qualifying that ultimately canceled his lap time, and then he couldn't put one together. The Williams would have been handy here, but this car is completely different. As long as they sort out their steering wheel problems, it'll be interesting to see how they fare here to see really if the characteristics of that car are completely different. This will tell that story, I believe. So an interesting backmarker to just kind of watch as you probably watch Max Verstappen drive off into the distance. As for my bold prediction, though, it's all about Mercedes. I think this will be a tough one for them, especially Lewis, who's had struggles at this track in the past, at least within the new regulations. I mean, he was fantastic here in 2021, but the last 3 years, if you include the predictions that I'm, or the struggles that I'm predicting, it will be a tough go at this track. So yeah, I'll say one of the bottom five teams to actually make a prediction will finish ahead of Lewis in this race. So yeah, and I did forget, usually I always talk about last year, so Perez did actually win this race last year, one of the few that Verstappen didn't. Of course, Verstappen did start 15th on the grid with a qualifying issue, though, and still made it up to P2, only 5 seconds behind Checo. So that's what happened here last year. Alonso did take the lead out of turn one, but ultimately could not hold off the Red Bulls and finished a little ways behind them both. Now let's get into Brad's bets. Last week, Leclerc on pole did not happen. It was very close. That was for plus 270, so pretty good value. But ultimately, if you don't win it, then it's a loss. So that was a no. Over 18.5 cars classified was a pretty good bet. I believe that paid out pretty good money, plus 175. That was a yes. Over 10 seconds win margin, that was plus 185. Personally, I absolutely hammered that one, so that was a big win for me. Tsunoda points for minus 135, supposed to be a bit of a safer pick, did not happen. That was a tough one. My safer pick was Lando top six. He barely got that top six, but it was a yes if you went for that. And then my long shot Alpine first to retire plus 800 did not happen because nobody retired. This week, I have a few less. I'm not loving the value I'm getting on a lot of the odds here, but I'm going to say Charles on pole, I think it's still very likely to happen, although you get worse odds, which is kind of crazy. He's plus 200 for pole position. This is one that I really like. Max fastest in FP1. I think the odds are only plus 100 because of what happened last week and how he didn't lead any of the practice sessions. But I think Red Bull may have been purposely holding back a little bit, not to show their hand. Now their hand's out there. Everyone knows they're dominant. Max can just go out and dominate a practice session. He's usually the quickest to get up to speed. It's still early on, so other teams probably are going to be testing their cars a little bit more than Red Bull perhaps may be. So I really like this at plus 100 for Max to lead FP1. Both Red Bulls to podium. I think Checo might not be as good here, but this is a track that he likes. Red Bull still out in front. for minus 120. I think that's pretty good value as well. And then here's a crazy one. I know safety cars, I think, have happened at every single Saudi Arabian Grand Prix so far. We only have three sample sizes, though. And I think this grid drives, I don't want to say they don't drive aggressively, but I think they're really good racers. They don't crash a whole lot. The reliability is great. Plus 450 for no safety car is pretty good. And that doesn't include virtual safety car. So it has to be a full safety car. The only worry is debris, because it's such a narrow track that if a bit of debris sprays out onto the track, it might have to be a full safety car to recover. Any crash is going to be a safety car, maybe even a red flag, but usually safety cars precede red flags. So it is risky, but for plus 450, I think that is fantastic value. So if you're a value chaser, instead of just predicting what you think will happen, this is a bet for you. The long shot, I didn't love a whole lot here. I just think Lando fastest lap could be on the cards. If Mercedes are struggling, I could see him kind of falling in a, you know, if he's in that fifth spot and he has no positions to gain anymore, he could maybe pit for that fastest lap and pull it off. I think the car will have the speed to do it. So for plus 1,000, I don't think it's a terrible bet, but it's likely going to be one of the Red Bulls, isn't it? So yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks to Shaq again for his time. Always a pleasure to hear from him. So yeah, that's episode 88 of Brake Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer, and I will be back next Monday to review the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. What a treat it is for my weekend to have F1 back in full swing, and I'm sure it is for you as well. Goodbye.